One of the things that's in music a lot, just the way you were talking about it, I couldn't help but think about how many songs there are about, you know, you drive me crazy, baby, can't sleep without you, oh, you're the only one. It's like, man, that person sounds miserable. You're making love and romance sound like a mental illness and also a trap, and that's a bummer. Those are not the songs to put on your playlist, I don't think.
Welcome to another episode of The Visionary's Journey, brought to you by Savvy Single Studio and your guide, Emily Falsigno. I started this podcast to help singles like us learn how to recenter on our unique paths and manifest our true desires. We gain insight from fellow journeyers who are starting to manifest and from visionaries who cross our paths and show us the way. Like this podcast, life is an experiment. We embrace imperfections and learn as we go. Come on, our future selves are cheering us on. The composer of the song Over the Rainbow, Yip Harburg, said once, quote, "Words make you think a thought. Music makes you feel a feeling. A song makes you feel a thought," end quote. I also think that if you listen to songs long enough, you'll manifest thoughts and feelings of those songs. And that's what we need to be careful of. Today, we are talking to my musical friends, Andy McCarthy and Jonathan Holmes, who created a podcast with their friend Chris Linane over quarantine. Unfortunately, Chris couldn't join us for this conversation. I do have to say that Andy and his crew have been great role models in my creative life. Andy taught me how to produce and edit films, and incidentally, this episode. On occasion, I get to photo assist Andy and Chris. And I used to photograph Chris's band Passenger. He's got a great voice. I'll link to his music in the show notes. And I got to know John at shows and projects and a lot more in this episode. I will always be inspired by their silly spirit, their work ethic, and their determination to manifest their dreams as a team. This was another quarantine catch-up conversation that went on for hours, so I split it up into two episodes. Today, we'll focus on the music, and next time, we'll wrap it into the process of making a podcast, since, once again, these guys showed me the way. We're putting a little twist on manifesting today. We're talking about songs that you should not put on your Manifesting Love playlist. Why did I invite these guys specifically? Well, don't you know, they have a podcast called The Worst Song on Earth. We're going to be talking about songs that are not good for getting stuck in your head if you want to manifest love. I do like to introduce people the way I met you guys.
Oh,
yeah.
Actually, it's really fun how I met Andy.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was still like dark out after six, and I was coming home from work one day. Oh my God, this was like 2002 people. Wow. I call Andy like one of my new friends, and now I'm like, holy shit, we're old friends.
Yeah, old Almost friends. 20 years. Yeah, it's crazy.
Holy crap. Anyway, so I was coming home from work one day, and when I see the word crew at this time in my life, I had rowed in college. So I was like, crew, there's no water anywhere. Like, what are these crew signs? And I get home and, you know, it's dark out. I get home, I go inside my house and I'm like, what is going on across the street? I walk into my living room and it's like broad daylight in my living room. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm not going to be able to relax in here until I know what is going on outside. And I'm not going to be able to relax because there's so much light in this house that shouldn't be right now, you know? And it's setting off my circadian rhythm. So me and my roommate at the time, who's also named Emily, went outside and we see all this stuff going on and lights set up across the street at this house. And like equipment being carried in and out, and this random curly haired dude, and this cop who's doing detail, and he's playing like Disney movies on his DVD player on the hood of his police car.
and we're like, what's going on? And I can't remember if I met you then or if I met you when I was standing across the street, but in front of the door, right where like the camera was rolling, and I was taking pictures with my camera, and the director is like, get out of the frame. I don't remember if you came over then.
I think I might have. I think I was sent over to get you out of the frame and to tell you that you couldn't stand at a certain point because you would be in the shot. It was on the set of a commercial for ESPN. It was a pretty stupid commercial, but I had to escort you out of frame, and then we've been friends ever since.
Yes.
Yes. So nicely told.
And then I used to have parties, and John came to one of the parties dressed up as Kenny from South Park.
It was a Halloween party, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think you were wearing Chris's jacket, actually.
I was. Chris's jacket. It wasn't the right color, but people still got a kick out of it because I just pulled it real tight so nobody could see my face. And I talked in mumbles and had a great time. It was a fun party.
Yeah, we had fun parties at that house. And then Johnny's been around. Sorry, Tony, Jonathan.
You can call me Johnny, Tony, whatever you like. Yeah, Two-Tone Brown was my funk name in high school because we were in a funk band, ironically called Johnny Holmes and the Friggin' Speedboats, but nobody called me Johnny Holmes in the band. They called me Two-Tone Brown.
Do you guys know what manifesting is?
I think so, but you know how it is with words. Much like reading anything, your definition may be different than somebody else's, so it's nice to figure out what the shared definition is before you start talking about it too far, I think.
Yeah.
So I can start if you want.
Sure, go ahead.
I think manifesting is when you have something inside you, an idea, a thought, a feeling, whatever it is, and it was being held back before, maybe by self-criticism, pessimism, any of the isms, and you break through that and then it becomes reality. Instead of it just being kind of an egg in you, it hatches and comes out and becomes the truth. That's my take on it. How close was I?
Very good. I love that description.
Interesting. Egg hatching.
Do you want to add to that, Andy?
No. Oh, I mean, I can't really add to it. I could only say what my thoughts are, which is pretty basic. And just a sense of believing in yourself and believing in what you want and focusing on that. And by believing in yourself and believing in what you want to happen, if you believe in it enough, it will happen. But there's a lot of hard work that goes in between believing it and having it happen. You just can't sit there and think, I really, really want this glass of water to become iced tea and then have it magically become iced tea. You actually got to figure out, I got to get upstairs and actually make iced tea. But by thinking that I want that to be iced tea, I eventually will get myself up out of the chair and make that iced tea and it will become iced tea.
I'm really glad you pointed that out, Andy. I've worked with, I've been a social worker for a while. And I've worked with a lot of people who needed to make some sort of change in order to get to where they wanted to be, in order to like their lives. And sometimes they say, I'm just going to let God sort it out. I'm not going to take any steps myself. And my response to that is going along the lines of the old story you've probably heard of the person who was sitting on top of a roof. And because the town had flooded and they were waiting to be rescued and a helicopter comes and they say, oh, no, I'm waiting for God to come save me. And someone comes in a boat, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually they die because they stay on the roof. And then when they're up in the pearly gates talking to God about it, God says, why didn't you take the helicopter I sent? Why didn't you take the boat? So they were waiting for fate to sort it out for them. But fate is actually all the opportunities that are presented to you along the way, and you need to take action in order to manifest your fate, or else it'll never come. It doesn't happen on its own. That doesn't mean that it's not good to believe in something beyond just yourself, but you have to take an active role in the process too. It's what I think you were saying about iced tea, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Great example. I love that.
Wait, the iced tea or the guy on the roof?
Both of them, actually.
Oh, okay. Phew. All right.
Andy, you're doing great. Andy is much better at being direct and to the point. And it's part of why he's such a good editor, I think. He's very good at trimming the fat, and he's very good at doing that when he speaks as well before he even gets started. He really doesn't like it when people talk too much. And I know that as a friend of his for almost for life. And I do talk too much sometimes.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, you really didn't need to narrate all that, my friend. But I like talking. And I'm doing it now.
Yeah.
And he's thinking, you can stop at any second now.
Okay, you can. I'll give you a stop. You can stop.
Oh, thanks.
How about if when I go like this, you can stop talking?
I'm watching for that. I'm watching for that. Cool. Looks like, what was his name from Sesame Street? The little worm there?
Oh, my God. Lolly. I totally forgot about the worm.
He's a
great
worm.
But I did want to get back to the iced tea.
Yes, please.
For a second.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've had situations where, like, I'll just put out my hands like this when I'm done washing dishes and I'm like, I'm manifesting a towel. And then my roommate will come by and just give me a towel.
Whoa.
Like manifesting your iced tea, you could be like sending your energy to your wife or whoever or your kids and be like, iced tea. And the iced tea will come to you. Like, hey, Dad, you want iced tea?
Yeah, but see, my wife and my kids don't listen to me ever, so I would never be able to manifest that.
Well, maybe we should work
Well,
on
if
it.
You have the attitude that it won't work, then it definitely won't work.
Yes, that is my point exactly.
Nice.
So my point in bringing you guys specifically, you guys are all musical, and you have a podcast about music. And one of the ways that I help my clients and my listeners manifest is making vision boards. But one way, I mean, you don't have to make like a paper vision board. You can use playlists. So
okay.
Like awesome. I have a playlist about money, but you can't do like scary money songs. You need like light and fun money songs, you know? We want like money.
You don't
money.
Want songs about getting money via crime. You want songs about just enjoying money. Lots of money, fun in the sun.
Would like money, that's what I want, be good? Or is that too much like, it's too much like I want that. It's not giving me any real, you know, ideas of
it's
how
it's not
to
talking about
it.
Having it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's more about just programming your brain differently than like, I don't know. Money isn't a great example right now because what I'm talking about is love. Right?
Oh, yeah. Like, okay.
The last episode of your guys that I listened to was the Tender Blender Hearts.
Oh, sure.
And it was hilarious. I'm like sitting there with the earbuds just like laughing to myself and people are like, what?
Oh,
is
that's
it
a relief.
What? Anyway.
Well, thanks for listening to the show.
Of course. Part of manifesting is making playlists. And I love that you analyze songs. So I thought you'd be the perfect couple guys to help me analyze songs that should not be on your manifesting playlist.
All right. And when we're talking about manifesting, are we talking about manifesting for singles? Are we talking about manifesting for general positivity, general good outcomes? Any specifics there?
Good question.
Oh, thanks.
Because with manifesting, you do have to get specific. Not specific. Specific. So.
Indeed.
The kind of manifesting I teach is singles empowerment. So we want to help singles break up with the notion that they have to be hitched to be happy. Because if you start with hitched, you're going to feel like there's something missing from you. Right? Like you're supposed to be one, but so you're only a half. But you're a whole person and your soul came here on earth to do something specific. And maybe it was something that you've been pushing down and pushing away your whole life because you're like, your negative self-talk is like, no, you can't do that. You're never going to be good at that. Why do you even think that you could even try to do that thing? But I like to help people pay more attention to the small voices and make them bigger. So I think that a lot of pop music helps us listen to the negative self-talk louder because it's like Strangers in the Night, the like Disney complex, Love at First Sight, like love is really easy, but it's not really easy, you know? And we kind of buy into these storylines and then we believe them because they're played over and 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 over in our heads because the music is really catchy, you know? You're toxic, I'm slipping under. Why are you getting addicted to men? You should get addicted to your own heart. And then go look for a guy that will support you.
Or girl.
Or a girl.
Sure. A person.
Thank you.
Person.
Yeah.
Mm. Or them.
Or them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I don't want to derail you, Emily, but it's something that's on my mind a lot. And it's something that sort of controversial, but there's this idea that there's one person for you. Ooh. And that idea is beautiful and poetic. The idea that there's just one other piece, as you were saying, that you need to find to complete yourself. But number one, it's not true. Number two, it gives way too much power to that person. Let's say you think you find them. That's like, oh my God, this is my one person. I can't lose them. I need to make sure that this works with this one person, or else I'll be alone forever and I've lost my soulmate and all that stuff. It's again, a beautiful notion, but it's just not statistically even true. You know, you can find tons of people who you're compatible with and happy with, and maybe there is somebody out there who would be even, quotes, better, unquotes, but it's not so much about better. It's about different, and it's about where you're at in that moment and finding a connection that feels really healthy and honest and true. So it's one of the things that's in music a lot, just the way you were talking about it. I couldn't help but think about how many songs there are about, you know, you drive me crazy, baby, can't sleep without you, oh, you're the only one. It's like, man, that person sounds miserable. You're making love and romance sound like a mental illness and also a trap, and that's a bummer. Those are not the songs to put on your playlist, I don't think.
Well, you know what's interesting is just the way you're singing that made-up song. That's an amalgamation of all the songs put together, love songs. Mm. Most of those songs are written after people have been, their hearts have been broken. You rarely ever hear a song about true love in the moment. It's usually about in the past and how I can't live without you, or you can't live without me. Or it's interesting. Like people like are yearning for true love, looking for true love, but they're all like singing about heartache.
Yeah, it's always coming from a place of pain, and that's something that's very relatable and very real, and especially for men who sing. Men who sing, it's a whole other topic. I won't get too derailed into it, but there's only so many emotions men are allowed to sing and still be considered masculine in our culture. And pain of a certain kind is something men are allowed to sing. Men usually aren't allowed to just sing, I love you so much and you're so great, and that's kind of it. They're not allowed to just be warm and excited about another person.
I wish they would.
I know. There's a lot of problems with the way men think they got to be in order to be happy in this world. And of course, and it's a masculinity problem. I wasn't going to say it, but you said it. I'm going to back you up on it. I think that it is a problem for both men and women, the way men are often led to think they got to be. And, geez, women have to deal with it if they're dating men. That's not easy. I feel really bad for women a lot of the time because of their options are not always so great.
Huh. Well, I love where you're going with this, and I really feel like we need to do another episode because
there's a lot
to talk about here. Yeah, sure. And I didn't realize this would get so serious.
I know, we're serious-faced.
But there is a lot. There's a lot of subject matter that goes into songs.
Yes. I'm trying to think of some songs.
I have a whole list.
Do you? Can you share them with us?
All right. So I picked ones that people would get defensive about.
Okay. Great.
Just to get a strong reaction. So you actually think about what you're putting into your brain. And one that I have been thinking about all day is Free Fallin'.
Oh, interesting.
By Tom Petty.
Mm-hmm. Yes. One and only.
Not John Mayer, people.
Wait, what? I didn't even know that. John Mayer?
He covered it. It's horrible.
Oh, he did? Oh, that's bad.
It's horrible. Don't even.
Ugh. I can't even imagine how he would sing it.
It's slow.
Yeah, it's like. Yeah. Anyways.
Whatever, anyway. So.
Free Fallin', Tom Petty.
The part I have a problem with is he's like excited about breaking up with this girl, right? Because he's free falling. But one of my points is free falling good or bad?
Mm.
Have you ever free fallen?
I have. I bungee jumped once. It was sort of like a free fall.
It's not scary. Free fall because you're connected to. I've fallen off a house.
Doesn't feel that way. sir.
No, I get it, but you're still connected. I've fallen off a house, so I'd say that's more free falling than.
That's even more free falling than me. Yep.
I mean, it wasn't a very. It wasn't. I was like a story up. It wasn't that high, but
I
still,
remember that was scary though.
I was on a roof helping my brother out with something, and I slipped and I slid all the way down the roof, and then I got to the bottom of the roof. I'm like, well, there's only one way to go, so I just kind of jumped and leapt off, and then kind of did a somersault on the floor, and I was okay.
Terrifying.
On the ground.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But so
I think,
but
it's terrifying.
Free falling, normally, if you think about free falling, is from a high point, and the end result probably won't be very good.
Right. So my story is, I went ziplining. Like, sure, I'll go ziplining with you guys. Didn't know we had to do a 40-foot free fall.
Mm.
Whoa.
I was also connected to a rope, but it was still really scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
You was still that, feel like you're free falling. Yeah. You're feeling free falling for sure.
Was that it? Was that in Costa Rica?
No, it was in Thailand.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I did something similar in Costa Rica where it was like zip lining, and then all of a sudden they just put you on something and then push you over a waterfall, and you're like, what?
Whoa.
It was pretty awesome, though.
So free falling, I think my take on that song is it's sort of embracing not taking a direction, not manifesting, sort of glorifying failing on purpose. And I'm not a huge fan of that. I think there's a place for allowing yourself to fail and just relax and say it doesn't matter. It's not quite nihilism, but sort of giving up on trying, especially if you're beating your head against the wall. But there's only so much time you should spend doing that before you end up just not doing anything. Just falling for falling's sake. That's not so great.
Sorry, I wasn't quite paying attention to you when you were saying that. But I think you were about just... Because I was looking for the lyrics.
Oh, yeah. Did you find them?
But I think you did hit on a note, if you will.
Yes.
That I think breaking up is purposeful and you should just own it when you break up with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because you're doing it for a reason. Because you're not feeling the love, right?
I think that's what he did, though.
He wants to leave this world for a while. Like, it's borderline suicidal at times, those lyrics. They're a little spooky.
But he says, I'm a bad boy because I don't even miss her. I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart. So
true.
So he knows that, okay, she liked him, but he didn't necessarily like her. And so...
A lot of self-judgment there, though.
Well, I think if he went any further with it, it's only going to get worse because he wasn't into her, so he needed to break it up.
I wish those were the lyrics.
Right.
I wish you sang that song, Andy. You've broken up with quite a few people, so you know how it works. You've done it right too.
It's never a good thing, but it's better.
But
than...
I would argue that it is a good thing
because
I didn't like those lyrics because he's judging himself on the breakup. But then my cousin said, "Well, if you." Not listen to the song, but know the background of the song, which is another question in and of itself. It's like, do you have to know the background of the song or do you just know the interpretation, our interpretation, which one matters?
Most people listening to a song don't necessarily know the background of a song first time to hear it.
Right. So I think the fact that he's judging himself is bad. Like, you shouldn't judge yourself on a decision that you made that was a good decision for yourself.
Yes, but I also think he's being empathetic in the sense of knowing that what he did hurt somebody. So, in essence, hopefully learning from it and not going to get into that same situation where he hurts somebody again. So, I'm a bad boy because I don't even miss her, and I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart, is just like, I shouldn't do this again because I'm not being true to myself if I'm getting in a relationship where I'm not even in it.
Oh, dang it, Andy.
Interesting.
He doesn't say any of those things. That's raw projection from my breaking up with girls' friend. That's what you've said to girls when you've broken up them. Like, it just wouldn't be honest. It wouldn't be real. And those would be much better lyrics. But instead, he's sort of making it coy, like, I'm a bad boy. It's kind of like, aren't I a rascal? So almost like a Looney Tunes at that point. I'm bad. And like, it's cute that he's breaking her heart. It's not really that cute. Much better lyrics would be, it would be dishonest to stay with you, so I'm letting you know how I feel about you, which is unromantic. time to break up. I hope you have a good life. I'm sorry if you're sad. It's not what I meant to do, but it would be even worse if I lied to you. I'm better than Tom Petty.
It would be worse if you lied.
That's right. Lying is awfully bad. It robs people of their free will because they don't get to make decisions based on what's really going on. They're making decisions based on someone lying to them. That's not great.
Yeah. No, it's not good. Lying is not good, people. No. Also, I think people stay in relationships too long.
Agreed.
Which is why I think breaking up is good. There's a whole podcast on that.
Oh, is there? An episode of your podcast?
No, there's a whole podcast called Just Break Up.
Oh, interesting. You know,
well, if you're in that situation, I would say yes, just break up. Like this going back and forth, like on and off, on again, off again, off again, like that stuff. I've never done that. I've never understood that personally.
Yeah, I know. I've done that. You've witnessed me do that. And yes, you're just don't do that.
Yeah, don't do
that. Yes, I've had some problems in dating in the past, though not for a long time. So that's a nice feeling.
No. You got a good thing going on right now.
Yeah, I like to think so. I'd say you do. But there was a school of thought for a while that getting married in general is setting yourself up to end up feeling trapped and feeling as though you're not always growing. It's natural to settle once you get married because it's like, I did it. I'm hitched, you know, literally connected now to somebody else and they can't disconnect from me even if they wanted to. So I've got them and I can just kind of coast. Instead of doing that, folks were getting married for 7 years. And then after year seven, they say, we'll get together, no responsibilities, no nothing from there. We can just end it from there, or we can have a conversation, usually a long one, it takes weeks. Do we want to renew this or not? So it's more like, you know, renewing a lease, so to speak, as opposed to
like
just
kind of
buying another person in the marriage process. And it was working really well for people. It just didn't really catch on for whatever reason, but I want to say it was maybe 15 years ago I started hearing about people doing this, and there was a couple of cycles of that, and then they caught up 7 years later, and then 7 years after that, and some people said, yeah, let's separate for a bit and see how that feels, and other people said, oh no, this is going great, and there was just much more health to their relationships in general because there wasn't the sense that they had been purchased by or had purchased another person in the process of getting married. Instead, it was more of a promise to try something for a certain length of time.
I like that. But yeah, I mean, maybe there aren't enough songs about the growth in between when you're married and growing.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear
a song about that.
You know, like
nobody
growth mindset. That.
Yeah.
What about Our House?
Is a very, very, very fine house.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. Two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard.
No.
I mean, that to me is like, that's talking about the glories, or maybe not the more like the mundane of being married. Like nothing crazy is happening, but we're getting by. We're doing it. Like things
are taking joy in it for sure.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's like we got a little fence and we got our cats and we're living
that
our
is
life.
Your life right now, Andy.
I don't have cats.
Yeah, but you've got pets, don't you?
I have a pet, yes.
Oh, just one. Maybe one. I was thinking of Chris. So, Emily, back to the set list. What have you got?
Yeah, what else? What else?
How about, okay, so when you're manifesting, I want you guys to think about like what your life will be like. Okay, so Jesse's girl. This is something you don't want, right? You don't want to be going after your best friend's girl.
Absolutely not. I've done it, and it's been done to me. It's not great. Does not end in happiness. Nobody was happy after that.
Right. So the one thing he does ask, though, which I do like, is where can I find a woman like that? So what you do want to pull out of those relationships is, what qualities do you see in Jesse's girl that you like, that you want to bring into your own relationship with somebody in the universe?
Wait, sorry, I spaced off there for a second. We're talking about Jesse's girl?
The song. I wish that I had Jesse's girl. He's very specific about it.
So, yeah, so I mean, that's looking at somebody else's girlfriend and being like, oh, I wish I had her.
Don't do that part.
Okay, okay. So, yes, no, that's a no-no.
That's a no-no. But I do like when he asks, where can I find a woman like that? Because those are the questions that you don't want to say, like, there's no, like, love potioning in manifesting. You can't manifest a specific person.
Hmm.
Because what if they're not good for you? What if all the rest of the qualities aren't a good match for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So what you do want to do is start making a list of the qualities or the values in somebody that you like. So I do like that he says, where can I find a woman like that? Because then it's like a business, right? You got to like have a target audience. But you need to be able to know what you want first.
So ideally, that Saul would then be listing all of the traits of Jesse's girl.
Yes.
That he wants to see manifest in another girl who is not with Jesse. A single girl, preferably.
Yes. Yes. Always make sure they're available.
I mean, I can speak. Oh, my God. I can speak from experience that I dated somebody who was dating somebody else at the time. And then we became our own thing. But then, at the end, she wasn't true. So
she started dating somebody else before she broke up
like
with you.
Or she broke up with me because she wanted to date somebody. Like, it was like, it was a pattern that I was a part of that I was like, oh, well, it won't happen to me because, you know, I'm a great guy. Well, it happened to me. It just kind of kept going. So if you see a pattern, usually it's going to continue.
Yes, the best predictor for future behavior is usually past behavior with folks, though. People are capable of change.
People are capable of change. That's completely true.
But it's
true.
Pretty tough.
Yeah, and you have to be willing to change, which is a step that's hard to make.
Yep.
Unless you believe that it's easy to do.
That makes it a lot better when you decide that it's easy. Oftentimes I have to do things I don't want to do, and I say to myself, this is easy and fun. I'll go for a jog because I'm old now, and I need to make sure that I don't gain weight and get high blood pressure. So this is easy and fun. I hate it. But I decide that it's easy and fun. And
I do the same thing, John.
I have a fun fact for you guys.
Oh, what's that?
I'm learning in this book about meditation that if you do the thing in your head, you get 30% of the effect as if you were to do it in real life.
Right. The mind over matter stuff.
So if you imagine yourself doing like arm lifts, you'll get 30% of
if you actually physically did them. Yeah, I've heard that. I've also heard if you're really hungry for food, if you truly imagine eating that food step by step, from preparing it, poking it with a fork, if it's a fork poking food, putting it in your mouth, chewing it, your mind and body believe that you ate it and you no longer feel hungry for it.
Yeah, it's like, are you flavor hungry or are you hungry?
Hungry. Yeah, indeed. Then you can just drink a bunch of water and fill your stomach with that stuff. Something's in there. And just pretend you ate steak.
There you go. Yeah.
So tomorrow night, I'm going to sit on my couch and pretend I ran 4 miles. And then pretend that I ate a salad while eating popcorn and Pop-Tarts.
Well, the thing is, you have to actually go through it. You have to be like, I'm putting my shorts on. I'm going... putting my running shoes on.
Wait a second. Wait. Stop. You just said go through your head.
Yeah, you have to go through it in your head. You have to imagine
every
step.
Yes, the whole process, each step.
But you just said put my pants on and like put my running shoes on.
And then if it takes you, 40 minutes to
run. Oh, I see what you're saying. Like 3 miles. In my head, say, I'm putting on my pants. I'm putting on my shoes in my head.
And then for 40 minutes, imagine running.
Yeah.
All 40 minutes. Like step, step, step.
Got it.
Then you'll get the
And it's funny because if you actually do that, like if you do it right now. Okay, so close your eyes, right?
Wait a second. Hold on. Wait. I'm not buying this for a second.
Just close your eyes.
Because, wait, close your eyes, Andy. Stop talking. Wait. Because if I took 40 minutes to sit there and think about running and putting all that, I should have just done it.
You absolutely should have just done it. But if you don't just do it.
I don't have...
But you might not injure yourself. You know, what if you, like, trip on a rock?
Okay,
that's
all right.
That is dangerous.
Yeah, fine. All right, so, all right, let's give me practice. Come, bring it.
Close your eyes.
Eyes closed.
Okay. Breathe in. You can actually breathe. Breathe out. Breathe in. Now, imagine
your leg, lifting out in front of you. Straight. Now straighten it. You're imagining it. Straighten it. And now flex your calf muscle. Flex your foot. Now you can drop it back down. And open your eyes and tell me if you felt anything.
I started to flex my leg. I was so suggestible that I was just starting to jog in my sitting position. And
I got,
if I did that for 40 minutes, I'm sure I would get some effect.
I'm not sitting in the best position to do that, so I felt uncomfortable the whole time. But I think if I was in a better position thinking of that, I probably would have worked. But like, I'm kind of hunched over, so like, I just was like, oh, my stomach feels all tight and weird when I think about
doing
that.
You were distracted. It's hard. Yeah, it's a quick anecdote on this subject.
I think if I were to be in a better position and I did that, I think it would work. I think
so. So there was this awesome study where they took, I want to say, 20 people over 70 and kept them in, I think it was like a movie theater, where they put them in a time capsule, essentially. There was no mirrors. There was only pictures of them when they were younger. There was newspapers around from the era when they were younger. I think it was the 40s and 50s. All the music, all the TV shows that were pumped into there were from that era. And they did a general test of their physical health before they entered the experiment to see their blood pressure, to see all these other aspects of their health that had changed with their age. And then after the experiment was over, after about 2 weeks, they saw that their blood pressure was better. All these other aspects of their health was improved because their minds thought that they were young again on some level, and their bodies reacted in kind. Their body said, oh, well, if we're young again, then we should have a young body. And their health vastly improved as a result.
It's like Cocoon in real life.
It's like Cocoon in real life. So your body does what your mind tells it to do a lot of the time. So if your mind has an experience, your body will be like, oh, I guess that's what we should do. And vice versa, if you're really stressed out and you do deep breathing exercises, your body will behave in a relaxed way. And then your mind will say, oh, well, if my body's relaxed, I guess I'll relax. And then your mind relaxes and you can stop being so stressed out. Yeah. It really works.
Sounds great, right?
Yeah, it doesn't sound bad.
I kind of just want to fall asleep now. Okay, no, but anyway.
I have that effect on people.
Okay, so another song.
Yes.
That I start to like want this on my playlist, and then the rest of it, I'm like, oh, no. Because we kind of talked about it. But Tina Turner, The Best.
Oh, Simply the Best. All the rest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's good one.
Yeah, I call you when I need you. My heart's on fire. You come to me. Manifested, right?
Mm-hmm.
You come to me. You give me everything I need. You give me a lifetime of promises and a world of dreams.
Mm.
Speak a language of love like you know what it means. Like, yes, those are beautiful things that you do want in your love life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's coming from one person or it could be coming from multiple people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then she goes on and says, she hangs on every word you say, tears apart, and she'd rather be dead, which I don't think is healthy.
Yes.
No, I don't think it's healthy, but it's funny because you bring that song up because I never really thought much of that song when I heard it growing up. But then it was used in Schitt's Creek.
Yes.
Which is an amazing show. But it was used to perfection in that show.
Yes.
And to see a couple with that much love and having one of them who had a hard time expressing themselves lip sync that song to the other with such emotion, like, that it made that song totally different for me. And like, I love that song now just because of that show. And again, it just proves for me, like, just the power of a song and an emotion and an intent, you know, like when you see somebody show that much emotion, it can change a song for me, at least. So I didn't think much of that song, but when in Schitt's Creek, when Dan Levy does that, it's like, oh my gosh, so amazing. So amazing. I could watch that over and over and over again and still get choked up. It's so good.
Such a good show.
I haven't seen that episode. I'll have to
see that. But anyways, so yes, I agree. Like there's some aspects of that song which aren't that great. But when you're in the throes of in a relationship like that, where you just utterly are infatuated and are in love, and a lot of that becomes true, and it's not a bad thing. I think those things can be bad when you just start a relationship and you're early in the relationship and you have those feelings. That's where they can be bad. But if you're in it, I don't think that's bad, because a relationship is a partnership, and you got to feel a little of that something towards the other person. Otherwise, it won't work.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting too.
But at the same time, you're your own person too, you know, and they're their own person, and you need to know that as well. But yeah,
I'm trying to think of songs about that.
You're your own person. Oh, I got one, guys.
Oh, you do? Tell me more.
Do you listen to Janelle Monáe?
I know the name. I've heard she wears cool suits.
Yeah, she's really cool.
Yeah, I can't play. I'm blanking on any particular song. So
there's a song called "I Like That." And she talks about how she's a mystery, and sometimes she's free, and she's like contradictory, factual and fiction, and let's see. I'm always left of center, and that's right where I belong. Ooh, great play on words. Ugh, love that. I'm the random minor note you hear in major songs.
Oh. Wow.
And I like that. And I don't really give a fuck if that's just the only one who likes that. Bam!
Pretty good.
Right? That's pretty good.
You got to listen to the music, though, because it's excellent. Excellent. Mm.
Sounds like there's not much to complain about in terms of that being a manifest song, in terms of who you want to be. Right. And who you want to be has so much effect on who you end up being with, I think.
Agreed.
Yes.
But I think there's an important thing that needs to be said, is that as much as you are you and you're independent of anyone else and you have your own thoughts and feelings and everything like that, the only way to make a relationship work is to know that the other person is the same. They have their own thoughts and feelings and everything, and that you need to compromise on a lot of things, and you need to understand that they're not always going to agree with you, and you're not going to always agree with them. But that doesn't mean that you can't work things out, and it doesn't mean that you know, you can't be together. But I think sometimes people feel like, I have to be me and you can't change me. I was like, no, I'm not trying to make you change. But there needs to be compromise a little bit. Like, you can't always be you, because it doesn't work that way. It's a partnership. No successful business is going to work out if one of the partners is like, my way. I'm not going to compromise. So, I mean, as much as I like that sentiment, which is great, there's got to be some kind of compromise in there a little bit.
Well, yeah, that challenge is how you grow, trying to manage the compromise and do things that you've never done before, because you're doing it for reasons outside of yourself, and you have optimism that somebody else's idea might work. Even if you have trepidation about it, you can have both at the same time. Concern, some sense of anxiety, while still deciding, yeah, let's give this a try, and at the very worst, we'll learn from it, and maybe I'll get to prove to you that you are wrong, and we can do that again. That can feel good too. So there's a lot of good ways to go about taking those risks, absolutely.
Well, so I do like that you brought that up, because you do have to compromise on things. And where are the songs about that?
I know.
Like, maybe there's a lot of deficits here.
Mm-hmm. Cat Stevens? Maybe.
Come on the peace train.
Oh, I know. He just wanted things to be peaceful.
Yeah, but that's not compromising. That's just being
idealistic.
Yeah, and it's or like being either too much of a pushover, or being like, you know, you just gotta chill and just go with me. You know, like, let's just, like, this should be peaceful. Just listen to me. Mm. You know, like, so I feel like, yeah, you want things to be chill, but at the same time, you want to be heard and the other person wants to be heard as well. So.
Hmm. Well, that was the first song that came to my mind. And I didn't really dig for compromise songs, so anybody has one.
That's hard.
But maybe there should be some compromise songs and pop songs, right? Like, absolutely. Let's get a little bit more realistic about love here, because the Disney stuff is just like so 1950.
Absolutely, the idealized, but also
wait. I think I have a compromise song.
You do?
Yes, the Monkees. A little bit of you, a little bit of me.
A little bit me, a little bit you. Doo-doo.
Isn't that the Monkees?
I think that is the Monkees. Yeah. Pretty early Monkees, too. Yeah. First season of the show, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely about sharing, but I can't remember how much of it is about.
I'd have to look up the lyrics, but.
Yeah, me too. I was just thinking about New Order, who I want to have be a good example of good manifest songs, but most of them are kind of a bummer. Do you know New Order, Emily, that rock band?
I do, but I can't think of something right now. Just, can you sing something?
Yeah, they're quite a band. They've been on my mind lately. They've got a song, I believe it's called Thieves Like Us,
mm-hmm.
where suddenly the singer goes, it's called Love, and it's so uncool. I think about it all the time. He's trying to be sassy about it. He's trying to say we should think love is cool, but he's starting to get old at that point and is noticing that he's not as fashionable as he used to be. So he's complaining about being uncool. But he just starts chanting. It's called love, 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 love. It's called love, 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 and it belongs to us. Like, really own it. And you've got love. Well, I don't know how long it's going to last. You don't know what's going to happen, but you've got to be.
I think what he's saying, John. I think what he's saying, John, is that. Especially at that point in time, it's the 80s or whatever, I think there was a faction of people who were like, you know, oh, you're in love? Yeah, it's stupid. Yeah,
exactly.
Love is stupid. But he was like, no. Love's cool. Like, so,
right.
So, like, you know, it's called love and you're saying it's so uncool, but it's like, it's not. It's like, it's a good thing. Like,
he was pro love for sure.
He was pro love.
Wait, so there were adults saying that in the 80s?
So he was from, I think he was from Manchester.
Yeah.
And he was a part of this club called the Hacienda, which really was the birth of rave culture. And rave culture really divorced itself from love. And it was just all about feeling and drugs and sex and sort of a nihilistic, hedonistic combo. And he was pushing against that, I think. He was like, actually, relationships and caring about other people is cool,
it's like
that night's party.
We can still get together and mingle but not be in love. You don't need to be in love to go to that next step.
He thought love was a good part of the next step. Yes.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
Well, it is.
Manifesting.
Manifesting love the way you want it. Yeah, Andy.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Well, so is there a glue that keeps your little crew together? You're like Chris, John, and Andy?
Oh, our love, our friendship love that's lasted. It's 30 years or so that we've known each other. I've known Chris for longer. Andy has known Chris for longer. But Andy and I didn't meet until junior high, which was around 30 years ago, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, what keeps us together, you think, Andy? What is it? You are extremely loyal. You have a deep love for your friends, even when we get, or I should say, when I get on your nerves, when we're on trips to LA and we're editing videos together, and I'm like, oh, just kind of, can you cinch that in by a couple seconds? And you're like, I know how to edit things, John. Ah, I've driven you pretty bananas on some of our projects. And yet, here you are, still hanging out with me, still making stuff with me. What is it? Why don't you give up on us?
You're just a good person, and I know that no matter what comes out of your mouth, whether it seems hostile or not, I know it's not coming from a hostile place. It's just, it's either nerves or stress or whatever. And so, I just feel like we have too much of a history. I say this a lot when I'm talking about my friends. And so we met in junior high, but we really didn't start hanging out until high school. Mm. And I just remember I was bouncing around from different groups of friends all through high school. And it wasn't until late junior year, senior year that we connected. And I remember every group of friends that I ever was hanging out with, I was always like, why don't we, like, hey, you got a video camera, let's make a movie, or let's do this or let's do that. And they were like, oh no, that's stupid, I don't want to do that. Let's go get beers, or let's go play knee hockey in the basement and whatever. And I was like, this is so boring. Like, this is what we do all the time. Mm-hmm. So I remember, like, Chris and I were talking about roller skating. And he's like, oh yeah, my guys and I are going roller skating this weekend. Why don't you come by? I'm like, oh shoot, all right, sure. And I remember walking into the roller rink that night, and it was you, Chris, Jeremy, Ben, Drew, Simon. It was just the group of them. Mm-hmm. And you guys had a video camera. You had these giant bell-bottom pants.
Was it the white ones?
Yeah. And yeah. You had a video camera. I remember walking in, literally thinking in my head, and I was hanging out with some quote-unquote friend at the moment. I remember walking in going, these guys are the guys I'm going to be friends with the rest of my life. I said that to myself in my head when I saw you guys, before actually really, really hanging out with you guys and knowing you guys. And it was true. It was like I knew just at that moment when I saw you guys, like, this, like, these are the guys. And you have been.
And you manifested that. You decided it. You wanted it. So. You made it happen.
Yeah. But the core of it is that each one of us, I feel, are very good people. Mm. And I feel like when very good people find each other, it's very hard to separate those people.
Yes, I would agree.
Because I mean, story. Like we're always looking out for each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's never about me or you, you know, it's like, it's, I think that's what's kept us together for all these years.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. It's something that you can't just create, unfortunately, but if you decide to really care about somebody or a group of people and they're the right people, it can become infectious. And then they'll care about you back, and everyone's caring about each other, and you gain a momentum. It snowballs and can last 30 years if you're luckier, or more. And there'll be times when we don't talk for months. We're in the midst of our family stuff, and we're not super social at this point in our lives. You know, heading into our 40s, we're not thinking about, oh yeah, what am I going to do to just hang out and pass the time? We're trying to be productive all the time, but we are always kind of there for each other in the back of our heads. And then when we have the opportunity to get back together, it's like no time has passed. It's sort of cliche sounding, I'm sure, but it's true. And I think that folks who are thinking about their singleness, I wonder if trying to manifest that with another person, romantic or not, would be helpful to think about how what you really want is to really enjoy making somebody else's life good as you're making your own life good, and knowing that they want the same thing, and how that can really cause a self-perpetuating cycle of positivity that's fantastic. It's a great way to live life.
Well, you know who does that?
Who does that?
Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith.
I don't know much about those two.
Didn't they get divorced?
They almost broke up after
after
he threw her a 40th birthday party, and that's not what she wanted. And they almost broke up over it.
Whoa.
And then they went to counseling and realized that it was funny. They went to counseling, and the counselor asked how long they'd been together. And he was like 17 years. And she's like, oh, you guys are new at this. And then they decided that exactly what you guys are talking about, like, I'm a person who has goals, and Will's a person who has goals, and we're gonna support each other on our own paths. So they're talking about the kind of relationship that you guys are talking about as friends.
Well, I think that's important, though, like, because I feel like my relationship with my wife is very similar to the relationships I have with my best friends, which is that I support her in what she does, and she supports me in what I do, and we enjoy each other, and we just have a great time. But it's not all about, you know, we have kids and we have a dog. It's like, we're not going to have those, you know, those romantic dinner, you know, candlelight dinners and all that stuff. Like, we're eating when we can. And, like, you know, she falls asleep on the couch. And, like, it's just like, you know, like, anybody would be like, that's not very romantic. But it's like, that's not what it's about. It's about, like, I'm spending time with, like, my best friend. And I get to be with my best friend all the time. It is awesome. And we get to go through these life moments together, good or bad, and we're figuring it out together. And and I feel like with John and Chris and the other guys in our group, it's like whenever we were going through anything, good or bad, we were going through it together, and we're always there for each other regardless. And sometimes that means not being there for someone, like just giving them the space to do what they need to do, knowing that they know that if they needed anything, we would drop whatever we're doing to help. That's, in a sense, like a good friendship is a good relationship and a good partnership. And so I just feel like my wife is just an extension of like my friends.
And Chris and I have known her for longer than you have, which is good. We went to kindergarten with her. Aww. So she's actually someone who we've always known and cared about. I never hung out with her, but I always was like, she's like the coolest girl in school. And now Andy married her. It's pretty neat.
That's cute. I like that.
Yeah, it's fun.
Cool. All right. I just have a couple signature questions.
Oh, sure, sure.
Besides family and friends, what makes your heart burst with joy?
When I have connected with somebody who's not a family or a friend yet, but I am so excited about what I found, and when we've really connected in a surprising way. Like on this show. It's been so fun, Emily. I haven't talked to you in years, and you're talking about all these cool things that I think about all the time, too. Trying to use positive visualization and try to minimize your negative self-talk and all this stuff. I was like, whoa, Emily's into that too? What fun. So I've been bursting with joy hearing you say all that junk.
Oh, thanks. I don't know whether to take that as a compliment if you're calling it junk.
No, absolutely. How about you, Andy?
I mean, can I say my dog? I mean, there's that. Is that
sure.
Of course you can.
I mean, it could be an activity.
Like too, is that family? Is that too much like family and friends right there?
I don't think so. I think it's different in a lot of ways. And it's great that you can love somebody that's not even a person and really get a lot out of that. That's pretty special. Not everybody can do that.
You know, I'll keep that answer, but I'm going to add to it. When I see acts of kindness, so like if someone does something really good for someone who really needs it, and you see that reaction to that person that person has who's receiving that kindness, like genuine acts of kindness, like not someone just like doing it for show, like, you know, someone that's genuinely helping out somebody who needs it, and that person receiving it, like they just, you see like the tears in their eyes and the smile, like that gives me like, it always gets me because I feel like there's not enough of that around. And so when you see it, it's rare, and I love seeing it.
It's great.
Okay. Are you living your ideal lifestyle?
No. Definitely not. It's better than I thought I was going to be able to pull off, frankly. I'm appreciative of the life that I have. Got money in the bank. Got people that are close to me. I've got a child. I always wanted to have a kid, and now we have a kid. But I've got to stress out in a day job all the time in order to make sure that we don't end up homeless. And if it were up to me, I would be able to let my mind wander with my family and my friends and come up with new ideas and just create all the time and not have to worry about ending up poor and starving. But capitalism, that's where I'm at, and it's working for me. I shouldn't really complain. That said, it's not the lifestyle that I would have chosen. I would love to just flash forward to retirement and not be pursuing making more and more money, and instead just get to live every day in the moment without those pressures and those goals hanging over my head. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
Thanks for that honesty. I like that. Thank you.
No, no problem.
I mean, I'm sorry that you're not living your ideal lifestyle. But
yeah, maybe I'll get there. It's nice to have something to pursue, for sure.
I don't think a lot of people are living their ideal life. And I think if someone says they are, I think they're lying. Mm. And like, you know, I'm right there with John. I have a wonderful family. I have a great house. I have money in the bank. I'm not feeling like I'm struggling. But at the same time, like, I think my ideal life is a little different. But striving for that ideal life is what keeps me going, keeps me moving forward, and keeps me trying to do better and better and better.
Mm.
If I was living my ideal life, I'd be very bored.
Yeah, essentially.
Does everybody want like tons of money that they don't have to think about anything and like live on a beach or whatever? Yeah, I think lots of people want to do that. But, you know, like, I got 3 kids that I'm trying to raise and I'm trying to set an example for. And if I had my ideal life, I feel like I would not be a good role model. I feel like I'd be very lazy and just sitting on the couch all day, like watching movies or whatever. Trying to live up to your ideal life is what keeps you moving forward and keeps you, you know, getting up every day and going to work and being creative and all that stuff.
So I wonder if the definition of an ideal life is different.
Yeah.
How I'm describing. Like, our definition of ideal is different. Because, yeah, ideal could be, like, having a ton of money and da-da-da. But ideal could also be being creative, like having a balance of this, like being happy with what you have, like a day job, and being able to do side projects or something.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like...
Can we change the definition of ideal is what I'm saying.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, I guess you... I mean, you could. I mean, like, for me, like, there's all these things I would like to achieve, and I'm still striving to achieve some of those goals. And I feel like if I were to achieve all of those goals, I'd probably end up being living my ideal life. But I still, at the same time, I feel like once you finish one goal, another one comes up, at least for me. Like, it's never ending.
Do you want to share one of them, just in case there's somebody listening who could help you manifest this vision?
I mean, there's so many. I mean, there's, you know, I'd love to, and again, a lot of it's on me, but I'd love to create a TV show that everyone gets to see and loves. I'd love to create some movies. This, you know, and I've done some of those things already, but it's always more. There's always more that you want to do, and there's always another thing that you want to check off your list, which is not a bad thing. I think it's good to have goals and to be reaching for something always. But again, I don't feel like I'm a failure because I haven't reached any of those. I just haven't reached them yet.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't reach those goals. Maybe my kids reach those goals that I would hope to reach. And in that sense, I achieve. Not that I'm saying my kids have to do what I want to do, but you know what I'm saying.
But like The Princess and the Frog.
Yeah.
Have you seen that movie? It's so good.
It's been a while.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Lately, I've been working with somebody on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So I have a question for all my guests that I am asking now. Who is a Black person, Indigenous person, or person of color who has inspired you on your path?
Jeez, where do I start?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, my stepfather, who is a person of color, who has influenced me beyond comprehension. I would not be who I am if it was not for him. So that, first off, I would say that, just straight off. John, I'll let you go, and I'll come up with another one.
Oh, sure. I think the story of Basquiat is pretty inspiring. It's, of course, a sad story. He was a fine artist, a street artist, who was discovered and kind of propped up as almost a sideshow for the fine art world. Yet, throughout, he never wavered from his authenticity and creating in the way that felt right to him. And he didn't live a long life, unfortunately, but I was really inspired by how what he did ended up living far longer than he did physically, and the genuine mark he left on the art world and a lot of people's lives. That inspired me early on. And it's tough because, sure, if you're going to try to take that route, it means having people not understand you or like you, or you're not necessarily going to be commercially successful. But you can hope that whatever mark you do leave is an honest mark that shows who you really were as best you could. And that's really the point. And Andy was talking about some similar stuff about, you know, maybe he won't be able to achieve the vision he has for himself, but he can envision his kids maybe doing it or it happening somehow because of what he started. And to live for stuff that's beyond your own lifetime, it's pretty heady, but it is really meaningful, I think. And that's what I try to do that as best I can, even though a lot of the time I'm just drawing goofy comic books for a magazine I write for, or writing about video game reviews. It doesn't seem like the deepest stuff, but I try to be as genuine about it as I can. Try to leave my mark with it. So yeah, I'd go with Basquiat's one of the first people that came to mind.
I didn't really know about him until I watched the movie.
Oh, right. Which was an interesting way to be immortalized, right?
Yeah. That was really good.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
I would say Sherman Alexie, who's a Native American author, writer, playwright. He had a different vision than all the white authors and playwrights I was reading when I was younger. So I would say Sherman Alexie is a
nice choice.
Visionary. In fact, I would suggest people picking up some of his books. They're really good.
Thank you.
Not as thoughtful and provoking as John's, but...
Oh, Andy, you're such a sweet competitor. And you win so often, but every once in a while...
I don't.
Every once in a while, I do all right, too.
It's not about winning, guys. It's not about winning.
I know, but we're those kinds of guys.
It's always sometimes about winning between the two of us.
Andy is much more competitive than I am, but I get caught up in it, too, sometimes.
Hi, everybody. I have a little bonus for you. I made a playlist on Spotify for songs that you should put in your Manifesting Love playlist. I'll link to it in the show notes. If you want to make your own playlist, here are some quick tips. Focus on what makes you you, right? Like what you love doing, what you love about yourself. Focus on what you want out of a relationship. How do you want it to go? What do you value? What are your love languages? How do you want other people to behave with you? What do you want your day-to-day life to be like? How realistic are you? How romantic do you want to be? Do you want to sprinkle in some of those Disney moments into your realistic relationship? It's okay to do that. So think about all of those things. Do a little research into the music. Think about music that makes you feel good. And start making a list of those songs. You can like start your own Spotify account or however you want to do your mixtape. I will link to the playlist that I made in the show notes. And if you have any songs you want to add or you agree or disagree with any of our conversation, I would love to hear from you. Tell us on Instagram. We're at Savvy Singles Studio. I'll see you there. I have one more question for these guys, so keep listening. It gets spicy. Have you found that hating on things is a good thing?
I wouldn't say necessarily we're hating on things. I think we're just being extra critical. Because I find that we start hating, like we start being critical about it, and then we always end, at least I do, I always end up being like, that's not that bad. I didn't like it, but now I think about it, it's not that bad.
So we have a dynamic on the show for sure where Andy is sort of coldly and calmly saying like, I have decided this song is very bad. And he just talks about it, but he's not mad about it. He's rarely mad about it. Chris has an anxious frustration about it. Like, what this song? Why would these people do this? Like, really empathizing with them, but saying this isn't what you should have made. Whereas I get downright upset. I start yelling now and again. Because for me it's about a broader topic. It's usually about how the world is a terrible place because the world propped up this terrible song that's about terrible things. So for me it's symbolic of larger things. Yeah, I get really worked up about how the world isn't better. And I think that's an okay thing to do. To get mad because you want the world to be better. And when you are just talking about a pop song, it's hopefully not so heavy as when you're talking about stuff that you really can't do anything about. Like so many of the world's biggest problems, I can't effectively change for sure in a podcast, but I can complain about a song and put ideas in people's heads and hopefully kind of model that kind of excitement about changing things and pointing things out that stink. It's all right to do that.
Yeah.
To be constructive in your criticism,
well,
though.
I think the other thing, too, is we could have done a podcast about the greatest songs on earth, but I feel like that's hard. I mean, everyone has an idea of what they think is the greatest song, or there's always a top 100 Billboard, whatever. Like, everyone's doing that. So why not talk about songs that you don't like? And there's songs out there that everyone doesn't like certain songs, and it comes on the radio and you're like, I hate this song, I gotta turn it. Like, why?
And I know, so say a lot about you. Yeah.
And it's just like, so why not talk about that? And the things that you don't like about that song. And it's funny, I was talking to, I don't know who I was talking to. It was obviously a listener of the show. And they were saying that, I find that I don't always agree with you guys, but then I find out why I like a song. Like, I don't know why I like the song, but after listening to you guys rip it apart, now I know why I like it. It's because of X, Y, and Z. It's interesting. It's, you would think people would be like, oh, okay, that's funny, whatever. I don't like that song too. Or, well, why are you hating on that song? But it goes a little deeper than that, because people start going, oh, I never really thought about that song. Like, why do I like it? And then it's like, oh, I guess I like it because of this and that and the other thing. The reasons they don't like it, I like it for that reason.
Absolutely. So, I had a listener tell me what the Heart in a Blender song is actually about and why she loves it, why she relates with it, and why it's basically for her a song of being too afraid to show that you really love somebody, but you've got teenage angst and you want to try to express it in a safe way, so you end up making all these grand platitudes about destroying your own love for somebody else by blending it. And she said she would have never thought of those things if she hadn't heard me complain about the song, and she liked hearing me complain about it, but wasn't so threatened by the fact that I hated one of her favorite songs that she got mad at me about it. Instead, she said, let me tell you why I love it. And I was so interested in that. So yeah, it can really open up such interesting conversations if you're willing to share a genuine emotion about anything, be it love or hate for a song. As long as you're being honest about it, you can really spark something genuine from there.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. There's actually an app now, like a dating app called Hater.
No.
And you match based on things that you hate.
I don't agree with that.
It started as a comedy skit.
You hate that.
Yeah.
And they were like, let's just see if this works. So they started it. And it looks kind of fun. I haven't looked at it myself, but I would encourage people to listen to the Worst Song on Earth podcast because of the way you guys analyze songs. And I think it's really helpful to know what you're putting into your head on repeat.
Couldn't agree more.
It's like a good exercise in digging into a song. And like knowing whether you like it or hate it because of the music or the content. What's the third thing you guys do?
The feels. Music, lyrics, and the feels.
Because I feel
it's actually feeling, but Andy.
No, it's the feels. It's been the feels from day one. Chris decided that he didn't like it after the third episode and has been trying to change it since. We all agreed to the feels on the first episode. That's what it is. Just live with it.
I think it's feeling.
It's the listen to the first episode. It's the feels. We all agreed.
You already said that. Repeating it won't change my mind.
Oh, that's what I do. I just recap.
So the feels is a manifesting thing too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And making sure it feels right. It doesn't have to feel. You don't want it to feel bad. It doesn't always have to feel good, but it needs to feel right for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to align with who you are and. Maybe that isn't necessarily a pleasant feeling, but if it's the right feeling, then it is the feeling you should pursue.
See, I'm going to take a...
I feel like it should be pleasant, but not like overly like positive. You know, it doesn't have to be like happy.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Andy.
I need to take a step back because this whole hater app thing.
Oh, okay.
Because, well, I'm going to bring it full circle here. But the whole, like, to connect on somebody on something that you both hate, I feel like it's never a good way to start a relationship. And I'm just saying this from experience. Like, if you're starting your common ground on things you hate, you're not always, it's like you need to do it on things that you both enjoy and like. Because if you start on hate, all you're going to do is be bitter towards each other. Because that's all you're going to, if all you have in common are things you hate, it's just a bitter conversation constantly, constantly, constantly. And you're not going to enjoy things together because you're just going to find the things that you don't like about it. You know, like, why didn't we like that dinner? Because the waiter was so annoying. You know, like, you're not going to talk about the good things. You're going to talk about the bad things all the time.
Yeah,
so
it's going to be born of negativity. And hate is, it's just anger. It's just constant anger. And anger is destructive. You want a relationship that's about constructing things. And if you're connecting on your mutual urge to destroy a waiter or someone else, then it's only a matter of time before that hate's going to be turned on each other, for sure.
Exactly. And so I feel like you're saying you got to find pleasure. There's got to be pleasure in there, and root out what's pleasurable and enjoy that. And it's funny because when we talk about these songs on the podcast, a lot of times I'm like, oh my God, I remember the song. I hate that song. Or I just heard that song. I hate that song. And then I do a little research on it and I find some interesting facts and then I bring it to the table. And then John and Chris are just like, oh, you're making me like the song even more because of all these facts I'm bringing to it. I'm like, so it's interesting. It's like you just, as you dig deeper into things, you can either find things that are really good or find things that are really bad. But
yeah, but you're connecting on a deeper level either way, for sure. Yeah. And just clarify what I meant about not always being pleasurable. Some people love music that makes them cry and feel alone. You know, the sad Joy Division songs or Cure songs or songs that make you feel really angry, like you're breaking stuff, listening to Slayer or whatever. But it still feels good because it is the right song for where you're at and it helps you get out what you are feeling in that moment. And you're not as alone with it because whoever made the music must have felt what you were feeling too. So that's what I meant by it can feel good, but like you're saying, Emily, it's not necessarily happy music that's kind of forcing you to have a mood that's not natural for you. It can be music that feels bad and good at the same time because it's cathartic and connecting to someone else who feels the way you do.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because one of my points when I started on this little journey for this specific episode that we're in right now was I looked up on Spotify, I looked up feel good music.
Oh, yeah.
And in the feel good music was Paint It Black.
Whoa.
I want the red and I want it painted black. I'm like,
yeah.
Is this painting it black? Is it the feel good music? Okay. No. Is it like, for instance, I didn't realize, and I'm not alone in this, so I'm backed up by one of my friends who just said the same exact thing. INXS. INXS. I didn't realize what that meant until over quarantine.
Oh, to be like in excess, to be excessive. Yes.
And so what my point is that like when we're little and listening to music, we don't really listen to the lyrics or know what they mean, you know, but we just keep singing the songs. Or like the music itself is what I like. Like, you know, I'm just listening to that and not listening to the lyrics. So is it like, is the feel good? Does the feel good mean like, these are the songs that I've always listened to and I just love the way it makes me feel because it reminds me of when I was back in high school and I was having fun with my friends and like, is it that kind of feel good? Or is it, I like the music, or is it I like the music and the lyrics and it makes me feel happy? Or,
well, I think it's very subjective. I mean, it depends. Like, that person could have been listening to that song during one of the most amazing car rides they've ever had, and so whenever that song comes up, it's not necessarily the lyrics and the music maybe, but it's that memory of like, oh my gosh, we were driving through the Grand Canyon, which would be weird because you can't really drive through the Grand Canyon, but like it could instill a memory, a nostalgia, you know, and that's why it's feel good. So it's hard to, you know, when you go on with Spotify, it's very subjective. Mm-hmm. You know, like if that person loves death metal, his feel good music is going to be death metal. Like, that's not feel good music for me, but for that person, it is. Like, when they put that on, they feel great. But right. I feel very stressed out.
Yeah, I'll try to sum it up briefly. I think the feels is about how connected you are to the music. And it doesn't always make any sense why you feel connected to it. But if you have that connection, then you're going to score high on the feels or low. When mm-hmm. I feel that a song is my arch enemy, even if I can recognize, yeah, sure, the lyrics are good, the music's good, but this song is my opponent in life. You can feel, maybe you don't, either of you feel this way, but I can get that mad about music sometimes. So it's going to score really low on the feels. Heart in a blender. Oh, I only want to be with you. Oh, man, that song is my foe. I want to mm-hmm. beat that song in a fight somehow. By Hootie and the Blowfish. Like, it really, mm-hmm. I'm ready to beat that song up. I mean it. I'm upset about it.
So, if we're talking about manifesting, we were on a wrap up until a little.
Let's tie it back in.
Is to know what you want.
Mm.
To be able to identify what you like in a song, like Andy's saying, or what you don't like in a song. And start there. Just like, know what you want, and you don't actually don't have to figure out how to get there. You just work with the universe. Universe is like your assistant, and you don't want to micromanage your assistant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let it do its work. And to commit. So Andy committed to us as his friends in that roller skating rink when he was like 16. And I think because he committed, he has followed through with an amazing friendship. He's been an amazing friend to me ever since then, because he decided to. When you decide to have the kind of relationships you want to have, to be the kind of person you want to be, you, sure, it's not going to go exactly the way you planned a lot of the time, but it will happen. And to make that choice to commit, without it, you're kind of stuck, I think. So I think that's a huge part of manifesting, is committing.
Like it.
I think, and then people think, oh, well, I'll get married and that'll be my form of commitment. But that's sometimes artificial. That's trying to just put it on paper and deciding it's a contract that's forming the commitment. If you don't have the commitment internally, then it's not really going to get you very far.
Hmm. Oh, well, thank you, guys.
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. Good luck making your Manifesting Love playlists, my visionaries. We'll see you next time on The Visionary's Journey.